listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Welcome, everybody, to the Tennis.com podcast. Once again, Ed McGrogan and Steve Tigner here to talk tennis. We're down to really just the last week of the season proper. The actual tour seasons wrapped up this past weekend at the World Tour Finals. I know we had some technical difficulties with the last podcast, so we obviously want to get our thoughts on this tournament overall. I remember, Steve, actually last year's World Tour. Whatever you think of how this played out, this was a much better version of what we saw last year. We had the sour taste of Federer having to withdraw in the final. There was a very lopsided round robin in 2014, if I recall. This year you had a little of that, but I did think that you got at least the matchups that you wanted, even if there wasn't anything that was that we're going to look back and say is one of the great matches of the year. But I think the players that I think deserve to be there kind of ended up where they belonged.
Yeah, this year made sense. Djokovic and Federer in the final. They played Wimbledon in the Open. Nadal, showing more than he had all year. Wawrinka in the semis, another slam winner. Pretty much everybody was there. Everybody was healthy. I think, if you look in the long term, we used to say at this time of year that the players were limping to the finish line, but that hasn't been true for a while. It feels like the schedule makes sense and this last tournament means something, even if there's nothing really on the line. It was still a good event, sort of worthy of the title of the year-end championships.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that just the sheer volume of what Djokovic has been able to win this year, I think that him coming into this event on a year-long run, but more so, more to the point, a run after the U.S. Open that's been pretty much flawless. I think that really gave this event a little more importance even to him. And I think that you could almost say the same for Federer, who obviously was looking to maybe get the last laugh in a sense, turn the tables kind of on maybe his most preferable surface conditions against Djokovic. And you even saw after the match that this was yet another tough loss to take for him. He's been able to beat Djokovic more than anybody this year. He's given him half of his six total losses, but in every instance where all the chips are on the table, it's been Djokovic that's been able to cash in.
Yeah, this tournament even was sort of, between the two of them, was a microcosm of the year. Federer won in the round robin pretty quickly. Djokovic, it turns out just wasn't his day. It was probably the worst match of his season. And that's how it had been. That's how it was in Cincinnati. Federer won that match quickly. And then when they played the big match at the U.S. Open, I felt, Djokovic was the stronger player. And I felt like Federer didn't have the same belief for whatever reason, and that also proved to be true in London. He won the less meaningful match, but then when it came down to the final, I felt like Federer wasn't as relaxed, looked more negative, was quicker to get agitated, and Djokovic was just better, when it came down to it. He didn't throw anything away in this match. So then in that way, it was sort of this, felt like the final and this last week kind of summed up the season for both of those guys and the rivalry in the way it is right now.
Yeah, and I think I'll say a couple things about both guys, but for Djokovic, I think one thing about this year in particular that's really taken him to where he is, you can name any number of shots, but I thought this was a big part of his result here. Really, it's he's serving very, very well as his career has gone on. I mean, he does. I could have said the forehand, the court coverage, the two-hander, obviously, but that actually that held true as well at Wimbledon and the Open against Federer. I mean, it was really you know, you would, I think, give, I think still even at this point, give Federer, you know, the check mark on the service column that, you know, he's always been able to do that. But I think that's really been one of Djokovic's biggest improvements in his entire career when you look back to even where he was in 2011, what we are, you know, what we were comparing this year to. But it's become evident that, you know, this is his tour de force so far, you know, just a 12-month run through everything. And I think that's a big part of, you know, the foundation of his game. And it's really from the first shot to the last shot of the rally, there's no glaring opportunities to, you know, to kind of get ahead on Djokovic.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It's almost, you know, he, you know, at Wimbledon, we came in, Federer was the guy whose serve was going to win the Wimbledon final for him, because it won the semi against Murray. He was amazing with the serve, but then in the final, really, it was Djokovic's serve that was the key shot of the match, I thought. And in London, in this past Sunday, Federer had a lot of success recently attacking people's second serve. Moving forward, he has the saber. You know, he's sort of has rattled some people.
Yeah, we didn't see too much of that this week.
And then you see Djokovic came up. The key shot of this match was Djokovic's second serve, of all things. He won 84% of the points on the second serve. And really, Federer didn't have a chance to do anything with that shot. So I think you can see Djokovic scouts Federer well and reacts well to the – if he loses to him, he reacts well and finds a way – you know, finds a way to counter him. I think that happened again in London.
You know, looking forward for Djokovic here, you know, I compare it to a little bit, you know, we had obviously another comparable season of excellence on the women's side with Serena, and I think a lot of people are, you know, could forecast a bit of a letdown for Serena in 2016. It seemed like it was the most, you know, draining experience just to get to where she was, ultimately not to win the slam, the Grand Slam calendar year. But, you know, it seemed like every single win, every single point seemed to just take so much out of her. And, you know, maybe she was the one who in a way limped to the finish line, if you will. She really called the season off after the Open there. Now, if you kind of compare it to Djokovic, I mean, it's a complete 180. I mean, Djokovic, he does not look any worse for wear, and really has only seemed to improve as the year went along. I mean, do you foresee any type of letdown for him going ahead, or, you know, what does this year really say about him going forward?
Yeah, I can't see a major letdown. The only thing I would say is repeating it. If you're looking for a repeat of this year, then that's probably not going to happen. I mean, this was, you know, Federer came back after his great year of 2006, and he had a great year in 2007. But that seems, you know, he wasn't quite as good. He was still.
Yeah, you did see the.
He still won three slams, but.
Yep.
But I just think that's, it's going to, you know, I think it will be asking a lot, and for Djokovic to do what he did, something along the lines of what he did this year. But I also think it will be hard to imagine him not winning two majors. So. Depends on what you call a letdown, I guess.
Right, exactly, yeah. And you know, and for Federer, looking ahead, I think this is a particularly tough assessment, because I really liked what I saw from Federer for pretty much almost this entire year. We really saw kind of I think him. Switching the rackets, having some new voices in his ear, just rebuilding, I think, some lost confidence over time. Also, kind of, I think, accepting where he is amongst the game's, you know, elite players. You know, he's clearly seeded the top spot, and he's done it a while ago. But I think he's even gone out and really acknowledged how great Djokovic is playing at this moment. I think that all comes together and bodes very well for Federer, even at, you know, his age. And just thinking ahead for Roger, I do think it's not out of the realm to see him kind of continuing on the same path as we saw this year, because, you know, not only for those reasons, but we didn't really see a lot of other competitors beyond, you know, the same 3 to 4 players that Federer invariably runs into at the end of most tournaments. So I think overall it's a tough call for, you know, if you want to kind of forecast ahead for Roger, but I think overall this year has to be seen, despite some very difficult losses, as a big, you know, plus for him.
Yeah, I think he's figured out how to play at his age. You know, the bigger racket, cutting, making points shorter, attacking more. He has a new, you know, the coaching situation has worked, the new voice. All of those things have helped. And, you know, he had just chalked this up to one of his best years, really, for,
yeah,
to consider his age and he won 63 matches, won a lot of tournaments. I still find it odd that he goes into these big matches with Djokovic and suddenly doesn't have that confidence. You know, it's the way it used to be when he would play Nadal out of nowhere. Federer, the guy who was more confident than anyone, suddenly looked like he didn't believe he could win. And I felt like that happened in the Wimbledon final, the US Open final, and the London final when he faced Djokovic in the big match. He didn't have the same look, and he didn't play nearly as well. I don't know if that's something, you know, it's something, whether that can be fixed, I do think if he continues on this way, there's really no reason why he can't win a Grand Slam, another Grand Slam, if you take Djokovic out of the equation. The other question, I guess, for Federer going forward, how good is Nadal going to be next year? Because that's something he hasn't faced a lot. Rafa hasn't been as good the last 2 years. What if Rafa's back to where he was? Then that's another big obstacle for Federer.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good segue to where I was going next with this is, Rafa making the semis here. Certainly his most difficult year, out of the way behind him. And I think that what he does going forward is perhaps, even if you're including, what does Djokovic do after this? How does, can Federer kind of get past the last hurdle? But I think what we see out of Nadal is probably the most compelling storyline, I think, of the men's game going forward. Because I think a lot of people, have some different opinions on where Rafa's career stands as a whole here. What are your thoughts on really Nadal? You know, we know about his season. It was like I said, a trying one in many respects. But he did stay healthy for one, and that we pretty much haven't been able to say for almost his entire career.
Yeah, that's true. I think Nadal going into 2016, he's the big wild card. You know, he's the guy who could really change things. If he still has a winning record, strong winning record over Federer, Murray, Wawrinka, and he's just at 500 with Djokovic. So if he's where he was, then he's a guy who can beat anybody. He changes, what we were just saying about Federer. He changes the expectations for guys like Djokovic, Wawrinka, Federer, if he can get back to where he was. I was pretty high on his chances and where he was going this fall, all the way until the last match against Djokovic. And that was kind of a sobering match. He lost 6-3, 6-3. Djokovic did play exceptionally well, but you throw that in with the Beijing loss, which was not close either. You feel like he's really got a long way to go against Djokovic if he's going to really turn that around or challenge there. I feel like that matchup shows the weakness of Rafa's serve. He just doesn't get as much on it, or just doesn't get as much out of it as he used to, and that serve is not going to work against Djokovic. He's got to do something with that shot if he's going to challenge Djokovic, and if he's going to do better in general. So I think that's something definite that he needs, that's got to be fixed for him. But otherwise, I feel like next year on clay in the French Open, he's going to challenge for the French Open again. He's going to be in the mix there. Otherwise, I think we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's a good point that really Federer and Nadal do ultimately just have to answer that Djokovic question to see where things will fall for them. It does not seem like Djokovic is really going anywhere anytime soon. Maybe a parting thought for Stan Wawrinka, one of, you know, the year's truthfully more important players. If we look back and if we look at the rankings too, really, it's a, you know, it's a clear separation. You know, you go from obviously the top of Djokovic, Federer, Murray, of course, as well. But Stan, again, this year, you know, clearly put himself above the rest on, you know, the second tier that really is kind of in that has been in that tier for many years. But, you know, he wins a slam. He wins, you know, he's the only one to beat Djokovic at a Grand Slam. And he goes and makes the semis here, you know, which we thought was not looking too likely after his opening round, after his opening round robin match, which was sort of really a no-show. And you know, Stan, I don't think the tune changes too much for him. He's really, you know, he might be the ultimate wild card in a 1 week or 2 week tournament, because we've seen how just, you know, how devastating he can be if he just is seeing the ball and hitting the ball as well as he can hit it. But, you know, overall, it's I think that's where we put Wawrinka, and you have to look, of course, at this year as, you know, yet another another feather in his late career cap.
Yeah, I think, you know, you know, for me anyway, with Stan, expectations have really changed. When I think about his season, before I looked at the statistics of what he's done this year, I sort of thought, well, maybe it was a little disappointing. Maybe he was his usual up and down self, but look at the stats, that's not true. He won four tournaments, which is almost as many as he'd won in his entire career before this year, and he was the only other guy besides Djokovic to make the quarters or better at all the majors, so he's consistent now. You know, he still throws in a bad match. He's not as consistent as Murray, but on the other hand, I would take him in a big match over Murray pretty much any time now. So I think you can say there's a big five at this point, and Wawrinka is part of it. You know, I guess the question, he's going to be 31. Like, is this? He's still getting better, still getting more confident. But is the aging process going to get in the way? I think he's got at least one more year when he's really he's still on a definite upswing. And I think, you know, I think another slam next year is a real possibility.
He also may have, you know, next year with the Olympics too. That's something to remember with his medal potential. There are a lot of possible routes to the podium when it comes to Switzerland and, you know, what they have on their tennis roster, of course.
Yeah, somehow I could see him winning the Olympic gold that Federer hasn't won. I don't know.
That would be something. Yeah, that would be one to kind of always have in the record book. That would be interesting. So, you know, Murray is actually the one, you know, we just alluded to there. He is the only top player whose season still remains. He will compete this week, leading Great Britain into the Davis Cup final against Belgium. A lot of obviously non-tennis events that are putting a sort of a cloud, I guess, on the. So a lot of uncertainty, I think, about the tie overall. But, you know, I think the show will go on here. That's what they've been saying, of course. And, you know, for Murray, I think that with the Davis Cup final coming up, I don't think he really takes an earlier exit out of London, you know, too hard. I do think, if, you know, to kind of include him in this discussion of where things go, I sort of do hold out hope for Murray after I think he is essentially clinched the number two ranking. There are actually points available for Davis Cup, but I think overall this was, you know, a very strong. Obviously, he could finish as high as the rankings the year end that he's done. I still think he's kind of overdue in a way for really another slam run, truthfully, because I think, you know, we've seen it before in years past, and I think he is kind of due for that. And as we've seen before, you know, the Davis Cup, you know, has led to greater individual success down the road. You know, Murray is in a little different spot than players who've done that before him. Djokovic is a good example, you know, that Murray has, you know, obviously long been an established player. But he's going to get a chance here to do, you know, a very significant thing for Britain, who, you know, for years has not had the, you know, they've had the, you know, the Wimbledon hope, or, you know, but they've had the individual, but rarely have they come, rarely have they put together a team that has competed for this Davis Cup. And it's a pretty odd year to see, you know, Belgium going 111 years without a final appearance against Britain, who has a title drought that's extremely long on their own right. It's a pretty compelling final for a lot of reasons, and, you know, and Murray, I think, is a big part of that.
Yeah, I mean, Murray is, you know, I think he's going to play well in the Davis Cup, and he's going to win his matches no matter what happens. Whether that leads, whether a title would lead to a jump like Djokovic is, that's a kind of a long shot. Is Murray's going to be 29? I really feel like he's in the same situation as Federer and Rafa. He's got a lot. He's as good as he was, and he, you know, he beat everybody he should beat. He's really distanced himself from everybody except the top guys, but he really struggled against those top guys. Lost 15 of his last 16 to Djokovic and Federer combined. He, you know, I think Stan is a more dangerous player. I don't think he's lost his last two to Stan. He lost to Rafa in London as well, and you know, Rafa's a guy who has traditionally beaten Murray when he's been good. So I'm not sure exactly where Murray goes. You know, he's been excellent at staying consistent and staying in there, despite taking a lot of tough losses to the top guys. He can't seem to break through there. I don't really know how, with his game, his sort of risk averse game, how he takes the next step without getting some help from people. But you know, I think he's sort of built a foundation this year. So we'll see what he can do. He's got the coaching situation is set up. He's healthy again from his back, it seems. And now it's sort of like, how do you work on really beating these couple of guys who he hasn't beaten?
Yeah. What else about this Davis Cup final, maybe beyond Murray, is kind of the big talking points or the questions surrounding this tie? You know, the other players involved are going to be Steve Darcis for Belgium. We'll have Andy's brother, Jamie Murray, will be, you know, he will be a factor in doubles as well. James Ward, you had him previously involved in some pretty important Davis Cup victories in his own right. David Goffin will be the other singles representative for Belgium. I guess just, you know, maybe, you know, as we look at this a few days out, you know, some of the questions that you have for both of these two.
Yeah, I would expect Murray to win twice. He's been so solid in Davis Cup, win his two singles matches there. You know, fine. Where does Belgium come up with three? And so they have to win the other two singles matches. That's generally been doable against Great Britain. Great Britain's second player, whoever it is not going to be on the same level as Goffin, and probably not on the same level as Darcis. Then it could come down to the doubles, and that's where you'll see whether it would. I think the Brits would like to have Murray and Murray out there if Andy can win quickly on the first day and play the doubles. That's how they did it in the semis, and that's how they got through. And Jamie Murray obviously is an excellent doubles player, one of the top. He's made himself into one of the best in the world. So that, I mean, maybe it comes. You know, it's going to come down to that. You never know what's going to happen. Those matches this year for the Brits have been amazing doubles matches. You know, that's what this one could hinge on. I guess the Belgians really can't afford another singles loss, or it's going to be over quickly. So I think, you know, Great Britain comes in because of Murray with a definite advantage.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's kind of an unexpected pairing, but you know, these often, I think, you know, lead to some pretty outstanding Davis Cup moments, and I think that is, you know, in the end what we'll end up seeing here as this goes on. You'll have a preview of this event later in the week as well. So stay tuned for that. And like I said, thank you all for listening to this week's edition of the Tennis.com podcast. We'll be back next week once again. Thank you.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.